It's all my Spanish right there. If you want cerveza y asado. Thank you for coming. Today we're going to talk about something that was started as a side project for me and just something to do for fun. And I want to show people what I discovered. And there's a lot of hardware involved that we're not going to talk a lot about today. Software on the Azure side and Asado. Maybe we'll talk about Asado. So one of the things when you start looking at IoT is that there is a lot of data that can be generated by these Internet of Things devices that you make. So you have a big use case in North America anyways for home automation. So something like turning on and off the lights or opening and closing the lock on a house door. All of these things can generate information and we can create this massive pool of data. But what do we do with the data? The sensors read all the time, we can collect it, and then we need to do something with it. And that's really the crux of what I ended up dealing with on this project that I had. So where do we go with data is really the question. We generate all kinds of data, but what do we do with it? Some of the simplest use cases are turn on and off a light. But what does that do? Right, it makes a pretty little light. It's good if you're building a device for something like your build server. Take a street light, don't steal it. Put a street light up and have it go green, red, or yellow, depending on the status of the build on your build server. That's all this is, really. So very easy to do. But we're not really doing anything with that data. The next piece of the puzzle is analyzing the data. So in my project that we'll look at here, I'm gathering all the data in, and I want to do analysis of it and use that information for future work. Maybe not as far as something like machine learning, although you could do that, but something like that. Take it and do business analysis on it. So what's our starting point? We have data. We have hardware making data for us. But where do we go? How do we take that data and curate it? And really, the start of this project is kind of like the start of the world according to Uruguay. First, there were cows. That was the morning of the first day. The afternoon of the first day, there was steak. And on the second day, we figured out we should cook it. And this is where I ended up. North American style, Canadian style barbecue. Really, we have a gas barbecue. We put the meat on it, and that's it. It's not as good as Asado. Asado's hard to do in Canada because we don't have the right kinds of wood to burn. So the other alternative is to look to somewhere like Texas or southern U.S. for inspiration, and that's smoking your meat down there. This device takes in, you can see on this side here, it takes in little pucks of wood. It creates smoke from them, and inside here are racks of meat. And you get smoke flavor, and it cooks it very slowly, and it turns very tender, and it's very, very good. But this device has just got a couple of switches on it. It's not really helpful. What's the temperature inside for cooking? If you use an oven in your kitchen, you know the temperature. You set it, and it cooks at that temperature, so you know how long to cook. It's a little bit harder here. And the solution for this is that you open that door, all the smoke comes out, and you stick a thermometer in, and you measure what the temperature of the meat is. But you've lost all the smoke. And that's really the piece you want to keep in, is that flavor. Those little pucks, they might be cherry wood, they might be maple, they might be mesquite. So they give flavor to the food, and the smoke is what transfers it into the food. So every time I open the door to check the temperature of my meat, I have a failure. So my idea was to take this. This is a meat thermometer probe. And it's very nice. It's got metal probe for the meat and a little headphone jack that I can plug in and get data from. Well, I can get signal from it. I have to translate it to data using electronics. So I took those and I said, I can make something or I can buy something. And what's the right answer to that? You make something, right? We don't buy software, we make software. We don't buy hardware, we make hardware. So this is pretty common that people use something like this back home. The problem that I have with it is this has one probe, maybe two on some of them. My smoker has a minimum of four pieces of meat in it. I want to know the temperature of each piece. I also want to know the temperature of the air inside of it. This also just looks like that. That's the readings that you get. It doesn't go into a database. I can't analyze all this information. I just see the numbers change. So I wanted to solve that problem too. This is what I ended up with in my first pass. It's pretty easy. As far as the hardware goes, it's a really simple circuit. This is the plug coming in, or the probe coming in. Simple circuit. Because I really don't read instructions well, I bought the wrong side of plug, so I had to buy an adapter. But small details. And then I have my piece of hardware over here, and we'll talk about that in a second. Now that I've got this thing collecting data, how do I deal with the data? Because I could turn lights on and off at this point. The first thing I wanted to do was see it on my phone, because I wanted to sit and watch the football match while the food was cooking. Because that's priorities, right? I mean, you want good food, but you want football. So I didn't want to have to go down and look at the screen every, you know, 20 minutes. Is it okay? Oh, somebody scored. So I wanted it to be able to come to my phone or maybe a tablet or something like that that I could have sitting there. So that was the first architectural decision that I made. And to do that, instinctively I thought, well, we can stick it in the cloud. That's what everybody does now, and that's how you connect these handheld devices or any device to data. So instead of going straight from the device to the UI, which would be my mobile phone, and that would be pretty hard, I decided to throw Azure in between. Mostly because I have free Azure credits with my MSDN. But no, Azure's a great platform. And it was something that I'd looked at and played with before. And I wanted to explore different parts of it that I hadn't explored before. So I decided on Azure. And the nice thing about doing that is I can start adding in as many different UIs as I want. Because Azure really becomes just a database. I don't know why I have the circle there. So how do you do Azure stuff on what really is a really primitive piece of hardware? Because that's all these little IoT boards. They're computers, but they're really old from a processing standpoint. They're equivalent of something from the 80s, 90s time frame. Azure's big, powerful. We're used to big and powerful. So how do you deal with this? So I started to look at some of my options. One of the options was to use Azure Service Bus. Azure Service Bus allows you to create endpoints, and you can send, or well, basically you create queues, and with the queues you get HTTP endpoints, and you can put messages on using a REST protocol. So that was one option, because like REST messages, that's really simple to send. Another option was to take a look at, this is the Service Bus one. The previous logo is for Azure Compute. I could have spun up a VM, right? I could have created a VM, created a web project, created a web API, hosted it in the IIS on that virtual machine, made it public, all of those things. As soon as you do that, what are you responsible for? Securing it, keeping it up, which is relatively easy with Azure because you can create a cluster. But all these problems come in that you have to solve. If you go to Service Bus, you don't have to create the REST API. That's done for you when you create the queue. Things like that are done automatically. The other option was to look at mobile services. And Matt spoke about this at the pre-conference workshop, and it's a little world unto itself that allows you to do mobile-type development using Azure backend stuff, and it simplifies the creation. And that's kind of where I went. I said, you know what, I want to focus on the hardware and have stuff happen in the cloud. Simplify that piece for me. And mobile services seem to do that. I didn't have to do extra things like security with it, because I don't want anyone stealing my secret recipe for my barbecue. If any of you want to use my device and put Uruguay secret recipe up there, I'm more than willing to take security off so I can steal that. The problem with Azure Mobile Services is that it's a preview right now. And Matt was saying in his session that it's going to change. And not in a small way. It sounds like it's going to be a big way that it changes to mobile webs, or I can't remember what the terms are, mobile website or something like that. So it's going to change, as everything in Azure does. So this is the standard architecture that I saw happening. And if I was to build a website, it would look something like this, right? Even if it was for something totally different, you'd have your UI type component, some kind of web API that feeds a database somehow. There might be other things in between, but basically this would be it. I could go with something like Service Bus, but it adds in an extra layer in there, some complexity. Same thing ultimately in the end. Mobile services bundles it all together. And this is the reason I decided to do it. Create a mobile service, get a database. That easy. So this is all it takes to create a mobile service. The details aren't important, but it's a two-page wizard. First one, you put your name in. Say that you want to create the free SQL database. You only get one of them, but you say that kind of a thing, or pick an actual database, pick the regions. And then the next one is all about database questions. What do you want the account name to get into it to be? That kind of thing. Pretty simple. Once you're done that, you get to the mobile services page. You've got a URL, a REST endpoint already available to you. You didn't have to write a line of code at this point. So I've already got a REST server created, and I've already got a database created with dynamic schema. And that's the cool part of the database. This database dynamic schema piece, that basically says whatever the objects are you pass to the REST endpoint, it's going to create that table structure for you. All the properties become columns. You don't even have to think about it. You don't have to worry about the data types, any of that stuff. You change the object structure, it adds extra columns into the table for you. It doesn't delete the old one, so you see your old data and new data being attached onto it. Very simple. Very fast to prototype. Somebody yesterday was talking about minimal viable product. This is how you can create a really quick minimal viable product. I spent no time on this stuff. I spent all my time on the things that I needed to get the data, not dealing with the data after. So we want to probably pause at this point. We've got our Azure idea formulated. The next piece of the puzzle is actually getting the data to Azure. Right? We've got our hardware. We know what our circuit looks like. We've got our data storage. We need to draw that line in between. And it's a one-way line. We never have to read from the database. So how do we do that? This part, all taken care of. The device, I chose Netduino. Anyone familiar with Netduino or Arduino a little bit? Arduino's the more popular one in the community. Works perfectly fine in Arduino. I prototyped all my stuff in Arduino first and moved to Netduino. So the difference between the two boards, Netduino, Arduino. One's a little longer than the other. Wi-Fi built into the Netduino 3. That's the big reason that I moved to Netduino. Arduino worked perfectly fine. I can write exactly the code I need. I can take the exact same inputs, but if I need network connectivity, I have to use RJ45, so a network cable, which I don't have by my barbecue, believe it or not. Wi-Fi, that's what everyone has in their house, right? And Wi-Fi reaches everywhere, so it reaches to my barbecue. To do that with Arduino, I need to buy a shield, stick it on top of the Arduino, and now it takes away some of the pins that are useful. So I need to use these pins here, analog input pins for my circuitry, and it's possible, I don't know for sure, but it's possible that those are being used by the Wi-Fi shield, so I might lose some of the pins that are available to me. Whereas with this, I don't have to do anything. I've got all the pins available to me. When you choose the Netduino, you choose your programming environment at the same time. This is how the environments are set up. You pick Arduino, you get the Arduino development environment. You pick Netduino, you get Visual Studio. We're all familiar with Visual Studio and everything that's good and bad with Visual Studio. You get the micro framework, though. You don't get .NET 4.5. You get .NET micro framework for Visual Studio 2013, 15, whatever you're using. It's a subset of the information, or a subset of the framework that you see in .NET. Because you're choosing this, Visual Studio comes, you get everything you get with Visual Studio. You actually get breakpoint debugging on the hardware. Upload the code to the hardware, put a breakpoint in, run it, and it'll go through, in this case, read the sensor and stop. Try doing that with Arduino. It's frustrating. You can't, essentially. You have to, what I call brute force debugging, you have to output every single thing to the console, every piece of information you gather. And then it all streams by. These things can take reading super fast, right? I don't have it set up to do that. I only want a reading once a minute, but I could take 20, 30 readings a second and try and read that as it streams by. It becomes very hard. So this is a big benefit for using Netduino, all the Visual Studio stuff we're used to. This is what the Arduino interface looks like. A little bit more primitive. It's also difficult to organize your code. You get one file. You can do multiple files, but it's not as intuitive in Visual Studio. So people usually write one ginormous file. And we all try to be good developers and do single responsibility and types of things like that. It's really hard to do it with Arduino. It's really hard to unit test. I can write unit tests for my Netduino code because it's just C#, a subset of C#. The other piece of the puzzle is getting all of the libraries you need to do this stuff. And when we do that in the .NET world, we go to NuGet. That is what was returned last week for MicroFramework and NetMF. There are not a lot of libraries out there at all. We've got a total of 123 libraries in total. And most of those are going to be completely unnecessary for what you're doing. Whereas if you look at with Arduino, there's libraries everywhere for Arduino stuff. Things you've never imagined doing, there's a library for it. So the difference between the two, I chose the .NET side of it. It meant that I had to build a bunch of libraries myself because they didn't exist. So I have on GitHub a couple of libraries, one for Azure Mobile Services, and one for a TCP client. There isn't even in the .NET micro framework a TCP client class. You have to open a socket and send the data across on a socket, which is pretty low level for how most of us work. So I mimicked the standard TCP client, and now you can do standard sends with that library, just like you would inside of a web API or something like that. The Azure Mobile Services, you can just spin up an object, that connects to Azure Mobile Services using your account information. And right now, it only posts information to mobile services. It doesn't pull any, but I accept pull requests, so feel free to help me out. I also did log entries. Anyone familiar with logentries.com? It's a good website for sending all your logging information to it. Gives you a nice UI, searchability, data manipulation. I built that because I wanted to be able to send information out without going to mobile services for debugging purposes. So I send my live data to mobile services, and I send my debugging to a log file. So log file in the cloud is all. So I have those three libraries created. Then there would be others if I was doing other things. So I got no pull requests, so I'd like to have some. One of the hardest things when you're debugging code, doing this stuff, is that the data's not right there at your fingertip. You can get the raw readings off of the sensors, but if I'm sending something to Azure, it comes back with a 404 or a 500 or something like that. I can't see what goes across the wire. It's not easy. We're used to spinning up Fiddler and watching that run the code on our local machine. Fiddler captures it, and we see that traffic very easily. But because the device is a separate machine, you can't capture it as easily. You have to do things like treat Fiddler as a proxy and have it send to a proxy and then out to the internet. It becomes much more difficult to track what's going on in your code, why things are failing. This is probably what I spend most of my time with on this project, is figuring out exactly what information was in the REST packet and the headers going to Azure and why Azure was rejecting it. One of the first steps that I took to solve that problem was I put lights on it, and it would flicker lights. It would get a 400 back, it would flick the red light. If it was a 500, it would flick the green light. So that was brute force debugging, because I didn't have any insight into it. This was really important in Arduino, because I have no capability of debugging in Arduino. This is the only way to tell what's going on. So that and log entries. So that was the first step. Log entries was the second step. So instead of sending data to Azure, I could send it to Request Bin or Log Entries. Request Bin's a really cool website for stuff like this, because it accepts REST messages, regardless of what the structure is. You get a URL, you send the message to it, and then it displays that message to you. So I can see exactly what my headers are now. And in this case, what my temperatures were on the different probes in my JSON. Really, really useful, especially the header part. This is kind of fake. This is kind of faked up, because there's a whole bunch of security headers that go in there for Azure that have my personal Azure account information in them. And that's the important pieces that you need to worry about when you're constructing these messages. And they're the hardest piece to get right, it seems like. That, and because you're doing really low-level string concatenation, this JSON over here rarely ever looks like the right JSON when you first start out. There's extra characters in there, and somehow we got three curly braces on the end, and oh look, we reused the variable name, and it just overwrote the first seven characters and kept the last variable value for the rest, and things like that start happening. So you may get all of the header information right and still fail, because you've got a badly formed JSON body, and it makes no sense. You look at the code, and you're like, yeah, it should be right. But because of the way these hardware pieces work, they might not be treating the memory spaces as we're used to on computers. So this is really, really useful for that stuff. The other one I used was log entries, as I said. Log entries, instead of sending this as my URL, I send to logentries.com, and I pass in basically just a string value. The problem with log entries is that you can't send all the header information with it. You're making a separate request to a different website. So you can send a specially formatted log string. Just like we would do logging in an application, build up a string with what the values are. Lots of times I did the JSON that I constructed, and I would log that. But I can't send the headers there. So it's it ends up being a different call that you're making than the call you make to Azure in the endpoint. So it becomes hard to debug the Azure piece of the puzzle. The JSON piece is all right, the Azure piece hard. So once we've got data going, we've debugged through all these different techniques and stuff, you end up in Azure in the old portal, because the old portal is the only place you can deal with with mobile services. And you go to your project, and you've got all this stuff across the top, and the one you're most interested with initially is data. You want to see your stuff there. And this is actually just an overlay of the SQL Server that's behind the scenes. You could open Enterprise Manager and go look at it if you wanted to, but this gives you a quick, dirty look for just simple stuff. You can put data in different tables. This project, I have one piece of data. It's temperatures. All goes into the same table. I can open that up by clicking through, and I'll see my data. And that's my whole data access layer was built by mobile services. And in this case, I've got, because of how it read the JSON message, it decided that probe 6 was column 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1. Because that made sense. And that sucks solely for the reason that I have to scroll to the right to see probe number 1, which is always the one I choose by default when I'm testing. So I've got to get in the habit of choosing probe 6. If you were to run this code on a separate mobile service, it might come out 1, 4, 3, 5, 6. It doesn't matter ultimately, it's just what it does. The other pieces it adds are a unique identifier, and then there's some logging, auditing type information to create date and stuff like that on the side. So you could, in theory, call this up, write a query against this ID, and alter it. This is really read-only data, though. So I need to build something to read off of it, and that's all I need to do. Like I was saying, I could go to the SQL database. It shows up under SQL databases. Same information, I can log in using whatever credentials I gave it when I created it initially in mobile services, see it in Enterprise Manager, and I can query it and do all kinds of magic that way if I want to. Because you can do that, you can connect up using raw ADO from a website or some other device if you wanted to go that route. Or you could use the built-in stuff that mobile services has. So mobile services has all these different packages for different platforms. You can get the iOS stuff, or just the JavaScript, or the Android, or the .NET, and you can use those class libraries and say, here's my information about my account in mobile services, get temperatures, and then put a link query on the end of it, and say between these dates, or times, or for this cook number, or something like that. So that allows me, because I have all those options, to do all this stuff down here, whatever UI I want. I have a Windows phone, I can build a Windows phone app. My wife, she has an Android phone, she calls it a phone. So I could build a full web page for that, because that's how big the screen is. I could do anything I wanted. I could take that data and have a different Azure service running in the background doing data crunching, saying for this type of meat, what is the peak temperature it reaches, at what time, and that'll give me the ability to predict how long my cook for the next time I cook that piece of meat will be. There's also a very interesting thing in cooking meat, very low and slow, so low temperatures, slow cooking, is that the internal temperature of meat will go up to a certain point, and it's called the plateau, or like a mesa, and it flattens out, and it just stays there. And it might stay there for 20 minutes or 4 hours at that internal temperature. And that's not a cooked temperature. And because in Texas there's nothing better to do, somebody has done a PhD thesis on why this happens. It happens because of the moisture, and you're getting close to the temperature where it's the meat tries to sweat off the moisture inside of it. And eventually, it'll go back up, and it'll cook to the temperature you want. But that point, called the stall, where it's flat, is really important. So I can start to predict how long my stall might be and when it will happen, so that when I can send an alert to my phone saying, hey, it's going to stall, or it should be stalling, check the temperature. Or I could build logic in to do something else. Some people like to see the stall happen, and they raise the temperature at that point to try and push through the stall. So you could start doing anything you wanted because you have data to analyze. Personally, I see the stall, and I'm like, oh, if it goes another 2 hours, the match won't be over yet. So I just want the meat to cook. So I don't have any analysis built in, but I could at any point, because really, Azure is just a SQL database to me for this project. It's endpoints for me to put data into SQL, but really it's just a SQL database. So I could do a JavaScript, like I was saying. All you have to do, reference a certain library, and do a little bit of code, and it sends this REST call off. Same thing for .NET. Reference a library, sends the exact same REST call off. iOS, Android, there's all kinds of them. So let me talk about the things I learned on this to wrap this up. This was a project like I've never done before. It was my first big jump into hardware, and that took most of my energy and time in it. The software stuff was super easy with mobile services. I literally turned it on, set it up the first time. Well, they were having problems with the portal that day, they said. And I couldn't get it to set up properly. And that was the biggest problem I had. I'd try and it would fail. I'd try and it fail. I'd try and it fail. I'd go get a scotch. I'd try and it fail. So I waited, and the next day it just worked. So it was the scotch that solved the problem, obviously. But the hardware was where I learned the big stuff. And one of the biggest things I learned is NetDuino doesn't have the same number of libraries as Arduino does. So if you're going to get into this type of project, know that if you pick NetDuino, you're going to have to write a bunch of your own libraries. There might be examples out there, something like the TCP client. There is one other than mine on NuGet. Sadly, the person that put it up there didn't build the NuGet package properly. So to use it, you've got to go to GitHub, compile it yourself, those type of things. Mine, I think my TCP is on NuGet now, and the package is built right. So this is the thing that you're going to do. You're going to build out libraries. You might not use a temperature probe, a thermistor. You might use a stepper motor or something like that in whatever your project is. So you might have to build a library for that. Cloud services are really secure. I didn't know before, this is my third trip to Uruguay, I didn't know before this trip that there's actually a fence downtown here that has locks on it like this. It's awesome. I would have got that picture instead if I'd known that. Cloud services are secure by nature, and this is a good thing overall for software development. All of the REST endpoints that are created by mobile services or service bus or any of those things are HTTPS. And this is good, except when you're using hardware. HTTPS is really computationally expensive. And those little devices, most of them can't do it. Arduino can't do it. It doesn't have the processing power. NetDuino can do it. It does have the processing power, but there's problems there. You have to go and get the certificate that's going to be used, in this case by Azure, and you have to pull it down and include it in your compiled code that you push onto your device, because there's not enough room on the NetDuino to store all root certificates that are available. So you have to cherry pick the ones that you need for your project. So this is, and I looked at that and I said, yeah, that's way more complicated than I want to do. So I went into my code and I deleted the S and everything works. So that's my solution to this problem. My data isn't super secret. If it was super secret, then yeah, I probably would. I am sending my Azure credentials over the wire unencrypted because I'm not using S and you could read the headers still then. So that's a trade-off thing. For my project, not a big deal. Arduino Uno, great device. Limited in its capability from a networking standpoint because of the Wi-Fi missing. That was a big thing I took away. I have my Uno, I love my Uno, I use it for prototyping lots of things, but if I want to do something Wi-Fi, I probably would use the Netduino off the hop. That was the big thing for Netduino. Netduino looks really cool with all these little blue things over here. I never use them. They're both basically the same device. Otherwise, there's a little bit more processing power in Netduino, a little bit more memory in Netduino, things like that, but basically the same device. To the point where the footprint, so the space between the headers, is exactly the same. And I built a shield, so my recent revision of this is my own PCB board that sits on top of this, and it can transfer from Arduino to Netduino just fine. It's exactly the same. So HTTP will work. Really important to know from the Azure standpoint. I have no idea if this works on other websites, but on the Azure side, it will work. This is cooking. That's the goal, right? That's a pork shoulder that was smoked for about 8 hours. It's only about this big. It was so good, though. Yeah, there was just barely enough for two people. And by that, I mean my wife got a little bit and I got the rest. But that's the thing, is I can put the probe into it and then go away and I know exactly when it's done. I don't have to keep going out and checking. And when you cook, you don't cook to time, you cook to temperature with these things. So knowing how long it's been in for, this one took about 8 hours, 6 to 8 hours, I think it was. The next one might take 4. Every piece of meat's different. So you can't cook to time, you cook to temperature. And that's why this project was so important to me. So that's my little experience with Azure, IoT, and barbecue. If you have any questions, feel free to get a hold of me. Stuff on the right. There's a group of us on the West, Western devs, that tweet, blog about this kind of stuff. There's no blog posts about this project up there. This is the first time this project's been seen, so I'm going to start writing blog posts about it now. So, yeah, any questions at all you want to ask now or in the future, feel free. So, where go?
Hello.
Yes.
I'm also an electronics hobbyist.
Yep. That's all I am. I'm no expert. I can tell you that.
I like your talk very much.
Thank you.
And I would like to ask you if at some point we will reach the day in which connecting a cable to a LED, for example, to an output, or making a mobile service will be the same, will have the same complexity. I am trying to say,
will constructing the circuit be as easy as
building a mobile service?
I hope so, because I suck at constructing circuits. I do hope so. I don't know if it will or not. One of the things that they have tried, and that's what the little blue squares at the end of the Netduino are for,
yes,
is that they make these types of devices. So it might be a stepper motor device or a thermistor like I'm using, and you can just plug them straight in. The circuit's already done for you, and you're good to go. So they're trying to do that kind of thing with some of them. Netduino seems to be doing it more so than Arduino. Arduino people, they like to think of themselves as being a lot more hardcore, which is fine. When you go into that world, you have to be more hardcore. So yeah, I hope it does. I really do, because that's the, for us, the software side is very very simple, but the hardware side is complicated, and it would help to bridge that gap. a lot if they could do that.
Okay, thank you.
No problem.
¿Alguna otra pregunta?
Hello. In robotics, we use Arduino.
Will I use which, sorry?
In robotics, we use Arduino.
Yes.
And then Texas Instrument.
Yes.
And now some people haven't developed, they develop system in Texas Instrument for Azure.
Yep. So that one of the things I didn't show on here, I didn't do it on this project, but I have done it, is I have a whole setup where I just buy the chip, and I can program the chip, and that's at a lower level. That's usually with C. And it's there's all kinds of tooling and different things we could talk about. I could do a whole presentation on that. But you can go to that level and build your own everything from scratch. And you could do this and have it connect to Azure or have it connect to whatever you wanted, because you're in control of everything at that point. So, yeah, you could definitely do that. It is a lot more, it introduces another piece that's not just like this gentleman was saying, the circuitry and the Azure. Now you've got a, how do I program the chip at the base level? And so it introduces a third piece that makes it, it's probably better for production if you wanted to build this and sell it. That would be the way to go. But for prototyping something really quickly, Arduino or Netduino for sure is way better.
Thank you.
¿Alguna otra pregunta?
Okay.
Thank you, Donald, very much.
Gracias.